Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for
Issues of Today.
Coming to you live, here he is,
your host, Taj Longino.
Hey, welcome to Issues of Today Talk Radio for Wednesday, August the 6th, 2008. I'm your host, Taj Longino, the new voice of the people, coming to you live from Indianapolis, Indiana, as we do every day, Monday through Thursday, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a wonderful show coming to you tonight. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Steve Ingram, Deputy Director of the Indiana Commission on Status of Black Males. Okay. If you would like to join us in the conversation, you can call into the show at 347-326-9697. But first, you know, as we always do, get into the song of the day. Song of the day is Cold World by local artist here in Indianapolis, Indiana, Big Phil. All right, so let's get into Cold World by Big Phil. You're listening to Issues of the Day, Talk Radio.
Cold outside, searching for finer things. But once you got gone to drop, we in for a climate
change. The last thing in the world a nigga could ever call big feel is a sham. Cause I done been broken down bad. Matter of fact, I still am. What y'all know about late nights in the lab and in work in the morning? I might be broke for the moment, but I'm damn sure working on it. These industry niggas done took real shit and twisted the science. So when you see me, don't call me real, nigga. Call me honest. Cold world.
I don't wanna hurt nobody. I might have to hurt somebody. It's cold, cold world. It's cold, cold world. Daddy never told me. Mama couldn't show me. Had to learn all by my lonely. It's cold, cold world. It's cold, cold world. I don't wanna hurt nobody.
That was Cold World by Big Phil. Right now, we're going to be joined by Steve Ingram, Deputy Director of Indiana Commission on Status of Black Males. Hey, how you doing, Steve?
I'm doing good, Taj. Thanks for having me on today.
I appreciate you coming on to the show, man, and being a guest for us, and because we need some conversation about the situation with our brothers right now.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's definitely a crucial time in the history of the country with everything that's going on, but more importantly, in the lives of black males. So, you know, with the CNN piece that just aired, I think it's an opportune time to further the dialogue.
Yes, sir. I want you to just basically give our listeners basically a little rundown of who you are and what it is that you do.
Okay. For everybody, again, my name is Steve Ingram, and I'm the Deputy Director for the Indiana Commission on the Social Status of Black Males. The commission has been in existence since 1993, signed into public law by the Indiana General Assembly. Back in the early 90s, there was a lot of discussion, and I guess the popular term during that time as related to black males was that we were endangered species. And so Representative Dr. Vernon G. Smith of Gary, Indiana, spearheaded an initiative to create a commission in the state of Indiana that would examine the plight of black males and make recommendations to the General Assembly for change. Really, it was one of the first of its kind here. The first commission established was in Ohio, and we followed suit shortly thereafter. But the commission itself is designed to look into the areas of health, employment, education, social factors, and criminal justice to research those areas thoroughly and then make recommendation to the General Assembly to try to get some things done legislatively. I think that, you know, we're definitely one of the front runners in terms of taking that approach, you know, back in the early 90s with the understanding that we needed to get some things done legislatively to make change in the lives of black males.
Okay. I find it very interesting, and I've done segments. I wanted to throw this out here first. I threw this out here last night, a couple of weeks ago. I did a week-long series on how to become better black men, black women.
Right.
And I did an entire week-long series, and oddly enough, CNN did their Black in America right behind that. So I thought that was kind of funny, but I find it very, you know, I don't understand it, but we lead. We are at the top of every category that is negative, from mm-hmm. violent crimes to imprisonment to not graduating from high school, not even making it to college, to deadbeat dads, to, you know, now we commit suicide on ourselves. We lead every category statistically that is negative, and we don't lead in any areas that are positive.
Right.
And go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm listening.
Oh, okay. Well, and I find it very strange, and I believe that any time that we try to make, you know, like with me doing the show and you're part of the Indiana Commission and other leaders, other African-American leaders who are trying to actually uplift our brothers and get them going, turn into the right direction. We keep getting, you know, pushed back even further because, you know, I believe it's a thing out there. They really, anytime that somebody, just like Dr. King and Malcolm X, anytime somebody's trying to push our people forward, we're a threat. Yeah, you know, because we're actually trying to do something good, and it's designed for us to stay down. And right. what I want to ask you is what is going wrong with the African American male in 2008?
Well, I think primarily, Taj, you know, one of the things that I don't know if it's something that we're overlooking or if it's something that the powers that be have just failed to acknowledge, and that is, truthfully, you know, brothers are hurting right now. You know, I have spent many years working in the community at the grassroots level here in Indiana at the city, Marion County, and state level. And so I've had an opportunity, really a unique experience, to see it from many different facets. The sad reality is that there is a tremendous amount of hopelessness and despair within our community. Unfortunately, it's affecting brothers in a serious way and negatively, but the reality of it is it's affecting sisters just as well. The unfortunate reality is that here in Indiana, black males make up roughly about 4% of the state's population. That's total. But we make up nearly 40% of the state's prison population. And what we found through our research is that of that 40%, nearly 75% of brothers that are incarcerated do not have a high school diploma. So there is a direct correlation between education and incarceration. The commission has been focusing in on this for quite some time now through the conferences that we put on each year. We had a national conference last year. This year we're hosting another conference entitled the Total Education of the Black Male. But the education piece is key. And you look into the fact that of all those brothers that are incarcerated, we're releasing thousands and thousands of brothers per year. And those brothers are coming back into the community without homes, without employment. And so there's a vicious cycle that's there. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of resources being directed towards improving that situation.
Do you honestly think, I mean, and this is just your opinion, not saying this might be fact, do you believe that that system was designed to set up purposely just for that, to keep them constantly coming back into the system? Because they know when you lock anybody up for a felony, even a misdemeanor, especially in 2008, employers are already, now they're checking your credit. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's a strike against you. Now you have a criminal background. So that's another strike against you. And a lot of, I want to know, you know, what's the percentage of people in prison who are innocent?
Right.
So, so now you have innocent people in there as well who didn't even commit a crime. Now they're sitting in there. Now their lives are ruined because when they get out, like you said, they have nothing to come home to. So what's left for them to do? Buckle back out to the same situation that they got in before, and just hoping this time they don't get caught. I believe that I just want to know, do you believe that this system was purposely in place to keep us continuously going back through that cycle?
I would say that there's really no question that there are areas within the system that's flawed. And any time that you are coming, you know, working your way back up from the bottom of the barrel, there's going to be a lot of challenge and a lot of difficulty that is associated with that. I will say that there is a tremendous amount of room for improvement. For example, I grew up, my father was in prison the majority of my life, and so I was raised by a single mom, and my sister and I. and we grew up in a housing project in Louisville, Kentucky. We were on every form of assistance that was available to help us get by. My mom had me when she was 15 years old, and, you know, it came a point in time where she said, you know what, I want better for my family. I want better for my kids. So she went back to went back and got her GED, went to Watterson College in Louisville, and received a degree as a nursing assistant. And when she tried to go out for gainful employment, the system was set so that as soon as she did that and had to report that income, our rent, which at the time was about $32, went up to over $400. Food stamps that we were receiving were cut. Medical was cut. And I remember vividly sitting back and listening to my mom on the telephone and watching her cry as she said it doesn't do her any good to try to advance herself and that she's better off staying at home. That is a tragic illustration of flaw in the system. And so it is there. And I think that, unfortunately, every so many years we have what I call the flavor of the month. You know, back in the early 90s, it was black males or endangered species. In the mid to late 80s, it was the whole reunification of the family through foster care, things of that nature. Right now, it's reentry. And so we kind of shift our focus from different thing to different thing, and we don't really take the time to address the thing at that time. And so it continues to create or perpetuate a mess of sorts. And within our community, you know, you're looking at it for what it is, and you see the hopelessness and despair. You see the unemployment and the poverty, the homelessness. And then you ask yourself the question, you know, why are our kids the way that they are? Why are they behaving the way that they're behaving when programs and things of that nature are closed? Recreation centers, boys and girls clubs, mentoring programs, after-school activities, all of those things are cut. And so you wonder, what are the kids to do? And so, and at the same time, and ask the question, why are we having these problems that we are having within the community? I'm a big fan of National Geographic, and I watch it quite a bit. You actually learn quite a bit from the animal kingdom, I think. But one of the things that I've learned in looking at the National Geographic channel is that in the wild, during a time of famine or during a time of depleted resources, they tend to turn on each other and they eat each other. In our community, we're in a similar state, only this famine is called a recession. And so, you know, when resources, opportunities, programs, services are all being cut, jobs are all being cut, and the unfortunate reality is you have situations like this. It's our position as a state commission to make these types of things known and also try to come up with some meaningful solutions. You know, and some of the things that the commission has been successful in the past is, you know, looking, getting legislation passed with regard to guns. We've made recommendations for increased after-school activities, for monies to be put towards those things. We've made recommendations about reentry and money that needs to go towards that. And you know, and then you get into the jobs, you know, and the homelessness and things of that nature. And so being able to put some money behind some of these programs and initiatives, I think it would help. It would help quite a bit.
I want to make a statement, then I want to ask you another question.
Okay.
we also have to do something for ourselves.
Correct.
If you people, you know, these young males these days, teenage males, if I say from the age of maybe 15 to 25 in that area, they're so infatuated by what they see on TV, what they hear on the radio, what they see in the movies, what they see out in the streets, because I believe a lot of them are going through what I call identity crisis. They don't really know who they are. They really don't have nothing to identify themselves with, so they're looking for other ways to identify themselves with. So that's one situation. Then you have another situation. Now, when they go into, you know, juvenile, or they go into, they're surrounded by nothing but negativity. You know, the CEO, if you're in prison, not to say they will care, but the CEOs don't care nothing about you. They're not going to give you anything positive. Half the people that's in prison are constantly feeding you more negative stuff to keep your criminal at life alive versus telling you, get out, do something better than this. But also, you gave me a stat of 75% of brothers that are in prison don't have high school diplomas. Now, they allow you to get degrees in prison, but how much weight does that degree hold in prison when you get out here to this workforce and you know the first thing they're going to pull up? Yeah, you may have an associate's degree in engineering, but you've been arrested for murder. Do I really want to take this chance on you? I got Bob over here who's never been in jail, and he has an associate's degree. What do we do here? So it's almost like a catch-22. What do you really do? And I was getting ready to ask you a question. My question is now, and this is kind of like a separate from what I just mentioned.
Okay.
This is another problem I see happening, and I want to know your view on this. A lot of African American mothers here depend on the system. So now what I see these young girls doing now, they continue to have babies. So that's their reason for getting that system. That can be the reason for being, you know, for being lazy. Do you think that America, the U.S., should implement a law just like they do in China where they can control the amount of kids you have by the amount of income that you receive?
Absolutely not. You know, I don't think, you know, we are still living in a free country, you know, with the sacrifice of the many men and women who have heroically served the country through the years. You know, we still live in a free country, and we do have rights as United States citizens. I don't think that it would be right to tell someone how many children that they can have. I would say that, you know, we do need to continue to make services and programs available that stress and teach responsibility. Go ahead.
You know, I was saying that because, you know, you have a lot of people out here that abuse the system. And when these kids are born, it's not these kids' fault.
Right.
They didn't ask to be born. They didn't ask to come into the situation. They were brought into the situation on a scam.
Right.
The more babies I have, the more assistance I get, the more I can just feed off the system versus going out here and doing what is right.
Right.
So that's why I asked that, because I do believe, you know, you can't tell people how many kids I have. But at the same time, if you're out here abusing the system on purpose, and you're not making, you don't have a nice, stable home for this child, whether you're poor or rich, you should be cut off, because you're hurting the funding that can go elsewhere. They're already struggling for funding for schools, for after school programs, and for teachers, you know, to pay them a decent salary.
Guys, let me throw this in to that thought. I would venture to say that population is extremely, extremely small.
Okay.
As I mentioned, you know, I come from a single female household and a mother who was determined to try to make a better way for us. Unfortunately, the system discouraged her in a lot of ways. And I believe that there are a lot of sisters who are out there raising children who want to do better, but the system doesn't necessarily assist them in doing better. And so, you know, you had back, you know, a while ago, you know, the whole thing of, you know, work to get off the system and things of that nature. And, you know, I applaud the thought and the notion But, you know, growing up in a household that lived that firsthand, we would have been better off had the system weaned us off, in my own personal opinion. You know, had it been a situation to where you got this new job, you're making this amount of money, we're going to slowly, or we're going to prorate your services until eventually they are gone and you're able to stand, as opposed to getting rid of everything immediately. And so I think, you know, that's something that, you know, should be given some thought and some consideration in terms of trying to assist these sisters that are really trying to better themselves. Now, at the same time, you can't, we as humans have an insatiable need to belong. We all need at one point in time in our lives to feel like we are a part of something, to feel loved. The unfortunate reality is that a lot of these sisters are out there that are beautiful and brilliant sisters, but they're out there and they're looking for love. And sometimes, you know, it may have ended up in the wrong places or whatever have you. And as a result of that, you know, you have multiple children that are born in the situation. That's where I say having more support within the communities for our sisters in terms of programs, in terms of services, things of that nature, even within the church, having more activities and things that are centered around supporting sisters that are out there doing it on their own. You know, I don't think that any of us have the silver bullet as to what we can do to totally alleviate all of these issues, but I think if we continue to have dialogue and thankful for you to continue to have this as a platform to be able to discuss some of these things, I think that it's through our discussion and through the hearts of the compassionate that we'll be able to deal with some of these things.
And I appreciate it, because that's why I created this show. Issues of today, issues. We all got them. We all need to talk about them. We all need to get, you know, if people can't get off their chest anywhere else, they can call into my show and get it off their chest. Let's talk about it. Let's come up with a solution, because, you know, I love my people, but this is not the 80s anymore. I can't leave my doors unlocked. I can't leave my front door unlocked anymore. You know what I'm saying? I can't leave my windows down in my car and go inside the store. When I gotta go to certain areas of town, I honestly gotta be aware of my own people. And that's sad that you gotta look out and gotta be almost not scared of your own people, but you gotta keep your eye on them, because a lot of them are hurting financially. And the only way a lot of them know how to eat is to take what you got. If they feel you got, if that brother who's probably been out of jail 6 months and they had no luck anywhere, no blessings come his way yet, instead of holding, waiting on faith and just praying that something's going to come through, you know, he may see you ride down the street. You may not have a dime in your pocket, but you ride in a Toyota or something. You know what? He's tired of waiting, and he's going to take that car or do whatever he has to do to eat. And I don't justify the criminal activity, but you got to understand, people got to understand, the law has to understand, IMPD officers got to understand, people are hungry out here. People are starving. People got to feed their. People are now losing homes at a rapid rate. And they got to feed their families and also feed themselves. So even though it's not right, they don't have no other means of doing it other than taking it from somebody else. Now, I had mentioned, and I kind of got off this, but I had mentioned 75% of brothers in prison don't have high school diplomas. And if you do get a degree in prison, I don't know if you could tell me, how much weight does that honestly hold for you going out into the workforce?
Well, right now it's showing that it's not holding a whole lot. You know, to be perfectly honest with you, you know, we've been out and we've talked with potential employers, trying to convince them to give, you know, these men, and it's not, you know, just a black male problem. There are a lot of white males, a lot of Hispanic men. There are a lot of women who are getting out of prison and can't find employment. You know, in talking with a lot of the employers, you know, we've been told on more than one occasion that the unfortunate reality is that the risk outweighs the reward. And so they're just not willing to take the risk to give these people another opportunity. Unfortunately, you know, it goes back to the, you know, the thought of this country in terms of me paying my debt to society. And, you know, now this is continuing to follow me, continue to hinder me and haunt me, because in most cases, a lot of these men, when they get out and they don't have a home to go to, they don't have money in their pocket, they wind up at the missions. And, you know, down at the missions, I mean, you see a little bit of all of it. You see the drug and alcohol abuse. You see the prostitution. You see all of those things that are there to get them right back to where they were.
Right,
and
yeah.
So, you know, the thing of it is, it's not so much in a police issue as much as it is an issue for our decision makers, our lawmakers, you know, our mayors and our governors and our senators and representatives and city county council people, those folks who come to the table on behalf of the community to make the decisions that ultimately affect the members of the community, those are the folks that need to be held accountable. And this is a crucial time in this country.
But another, and I go back to this too. All these people need to be held accountable, but also we got to hold ourselves a little bit accountable. One thing that I get tired of hearing from our people, especially when something happens, we don't fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like some young girls who got, and I know this is probably not topic, but the young girls who got gunned down, their kids on Holby Street.
Yeah.
We haven't heard anything else in the media about that.
Right.
Why isn't there a coalition of people, just like with somebody of white race or another race? They fight to get answers. They fight for their justice. We don't fight for it. We hear about it. We argue. We fight, or we argue about it. We get mad about it, but then that's it. You know, we haven't heard anything else on the news about the gentleman who did it. Did they get time? What happened to them? Did they get released? What really happened? There's no. We don't have a coalition of individuals who, anytime something happens, they're right there to fight for us. And then so the media knows and the lawmakers knows that we really got to do something, because you know, this could be a problem. We don't have it anymore. We don't have, you know, we had the Million Man March, but I think we need more of them. You know, we maybe need 10, we need probably 10 Million Man Marches a year. You know, maybe 30 rallies a year or something, anything to keep the morale up.
Right.
Because go ahead.
I think, Todd, I'm sorry to cut you off. That's a sensitive area for me. And I really was biting at the bit to kind of to jump in right there.
Oh, okay.
And I can tell you what I see through my eyes. As a community, we are so factionalized. There are so many different segments. Everybody seemingly, by and large, is doing their own thing. We only come together when we have a tragedy similar to that. During the time when the young ladies were and their babies were gunned down on Hovey, we saw a lot of organizations coming out. We saw a lot of preachers coming out. We saw a lot of concerned community members coming out. And during that time, we came together. After we got some sort of result.
Yeah, because what I was going off basically off what I turned the TV on every morning. I was trying to figure out, okay, what happened next? Where's the latest update on that story? What happened? And I wasn't getting any answers. So that I was basing my statement off of that. But my apologies on that. I was wrong.
No, you weren't wrong at all, Taj. In fact, I'm agreeing with you to a degree, because.
Okay.
During that time, we came together, and once we get the result that we desire, and in this instance, once the men who were responsible were found and brought to justice, so to speak, we all kind of went back into doing our own things. We as a people oftentimes become very reactive as opposed to proactive, meaning once something happens, we come up in arms and we come together, and then shortly thereafter, we go on back our separate ways, and then we wait for the next problem or issue to come about. We have not, as a community, come together and stood in outrage and disgust with what's going on in our education system with our children. We've not come together as a community in outrage and disgust with the difficulty of our men and women getting out of prison, finding employment, and trying to move on with their lives and become productive citizens in this country. And until we start coming together, put our differences aside, put our agendas, our personal agendas aside, put the rugged individualism aside, we're not going to make the progress that we need to be making. And that's what we've been trying to get out for quite some time now. It's no wonder that we don't get the support that we need from local, state, and federal government if we're not taken seriously. And often we're not taken seriously because we don't come together on an issue. You know, there are some problems, and I agree with you again, there are some problems that money can't fix. Money can't fix everything. It helps, but it can't fix everything. And another thing that you said a moment ago is we can't continue to constantly point the finger and say that it's everyone else's fault and not take some individual accountability for our actions in terms of what we're doing out in the streets, the image that we are portraying, what's going on in our homes and with our children, and things of that nature. There are some things that we can deal with.
Now, that's another thing I was getting ready to mention. You know, we actually do a lot of good. You know, there's a lot of hip-hop artists doing a lot of good in the community. There's a lot of NBA players doing a lot of good in the community, a lot of actors, actresses, entrepreneurs doing a lot of good in the community. But it does not get heavily promoted enough to overshadow the negative stuff, you know.
Right.
So when I turned on BET the other day, I've seen this new little show they have out where, you know, a sister's trying to get with these couple of brothers, and they take them on this little mental test. But that's not what BET was built upon. BET was built upon substance. BET was built upon, you know, something that you can, you know, learn from. Now, I don't even watch BET until Sunday come around. You know, and you know what I mean? Because there's nothing really on there worthwhile watching. We, you know, a lot of us are visual people. We respond on visual aids,
right,
you know, and audio. So we doing a lot of good, but it's not getting promoted. You know, Jay-Z, yeah, they have the money, and basketball players, they're doing all these good things, but they're not. You don't hear that stuff in the music. You don't see that on TV, and it's not
right,
heavily promoted. So it makes it seem like, yeah, we're doing it, but we're not. We're keeping hush mouth on it.
Right.
So they don't get to see that side of them, and know that this is what you're really supposed to be doing.
Right. Well, you know, you're absolutely right in it that BET is definitely not the BET that used to be. When Bob Johnson sold BET to Viacom, the programming changed immediately. You know, we don't have the Teen Summit anymore with Prince DeJour and those folks. You know, we don't have the BET Nightly News with Tad and Jackie Reed and Ed Gordon. You know, we don't have those types of things going on anymore. You know, fortunately for us, here in Indiana, we've got, you know, our one radio show, and that's the Amos Brown Show on AM 1310, which is the show of record for the black community, in which we're able to talk about a lot of things that are affecting the black community. The reality is that we've been talking for a long time, Taj. You know,
yeah.
we've been talking for a long time. We've been meeting, going to the meeting after the meeting while planning the next meeting, and time is continuing to tick away. You know, someone told me once before, you've got a minute in front of you and a minute behind you. You'll never get the one behind you back, and the one in front of you is too quick for you to catch. And so,
wow.
You know, you've got to use it, use your time wisely. And with that, you know, just saying that the time has come now that we need to start putting a lot of our thoughts to action. Dennis Bland of Center for Leadership Development told me a couple years ago with the report that we put out, you know, the report is good, but now how do you take it off the page and put it in somebody's life? That's the question. And that's what we need to be looking at and considering within the black community is how are we going to positively affect change and at the same time change someone's life for the better. You know, we've got to, you know, get back to that spirit of community that we once had.
I have an answer, a partial solution to that. And that partial solution is I'm working on putting together, I'm working with a couple of individuals locally here in the city to put together a rally called Real Fathers Please Stand Up.
Okay.
Okay, and what that rally is going to consist of is a breakdown. I will be head speaker, and what that's going to do is I'm going to give them a blueprint, a SOP on their responsibilities, why this responsibility is very important, and the things that they need to do, and certain things that they can do if the system is not helping them.
Right.
So, and that's for, I see it as in like doing it downtown, having every father in the city of Indianapolis, you know, coming down, mothers too, whoever, and just speaking to everybody and taking that in around the entire U.S. like a tour. You
mm-hmm.
know, go to Chicago, go to Midwest and head to the East Coast and do this, and then come back around once that is completed, come back with another rally for, you know, prisoners, for, you know, for single mothers, and continuing on with them. And I think something like that, the impact of that would definitely, we're doing that consistently everywhere you go. I believe that will do, somebody's going to touch somebody, somebody's going to change. So that's what I'm trying to work on as far as putting together that to help us and everybody, not just our races, everybody in general.
Right, and you should be applauded for that because it really takes us as a collective to sit down and bring new and fresh and innovative ideas to the table to positively affect the community. You know, we need to have more situations where we're engaged and where we can see some of the positives. Not always the negatives. And the unfortunate reality is that, you know, we are not in control of the media in terms of what goes on the news, what's played on the radios. Everybody's got somebody to answer to. And
right.
In most cases, you know, just as we, you know, they say it in movies and music and everything else, you know, sex and violence sell. And so oftentimes the first 5 minutes or so of the news, you're going to see all of the negative stuff that's going on. And, you know, it is a situation where in a lot of cases, you know, we in terms of our community are involved. And, you know, there are cases where we're not. And so, you know, until we start making positive steps towards the upliftment of us all, then, you know, we're going to continue to see some of these things until we decide that now's the time for, you know, for us to come together as a community and really work towards making some change. We're going to continue to see these types of things. And unfortunately, with gas prices being high, you know, the loss of jobs and unemployment being what it is within the black community, if we don't get a hold to some of these things that are going on, I could honestly see it getting a little bit worse, and so or a lot of bit worse, you know. And so, you know, we've really got to do something, and we can't continue to spend another year talking about it. July was a bloody month here in the city, and so, you know, but there's not a lot of discussion in terms of what we're going to do about
it. You know what? It's not, it's sad, but it's not much. You can't stop crime. You can diminish it. You can decrease it, but you can't stop it. If somebody wants to kill you, they're going to kill you, and there's nothing that anybody can do. So it's a thing of, can we get the gun shops out of the rural areas? Can we get the liquor stores out of the rural areas? If we can get some of those knocked down, and you know, so that way when you wake up, you don't see a liquor store on every corner, you don't see a gun shop on every corner. I'd rather you see a church on every corner, or maybe a community center on every corner. But if we can get those knocked down, maybe we can slow down the drinking, and the drinking is causing, you know, the violence, because, you know, the drinking, you know, changes the mindset.
Right.
So I believe another solution could be is to get rid of these gun shops, get rid of these liquor stores. But will they do it? Do we have enough power? Do we have enough strong power here? Every city has their leaders. They have a lot of power and a lot of pull. Do we have enough pull here to get that done? Or will it be the money overshadowing, overtaking that plan to get that removed because they make a lot of money off of it?
Well, you know, one of the things that made the civil rights movement as successful as it was that, you know, one principle it stands out to me, and that is their strength in numbers. You know, we as members of the community have to stand up for our community and say that this is what we're not going to have. You know, one of the things that I continue to yell out at the top of my lungs is, what are you going to do? Whose life will your silence save? You know, we've got to start opening our mouth, and we've got to start taking account for what's going on in our communities. If not for you, then do it for your children. If not for your children, do it for their children and their children and their children. But every movement has a starting point. The problem is that we haven't gotten ready to get started yet. You know, you can kind of feel, you know, that there's a little something in the air with everything that's going on, but it hasn't quite gotten going yet. And until, you know, we make up in our minds that this is something we're going to tackle, the problem's going to persist.
Well, I put together an idea, a brainstormed idea of what I believe should be altered in every rural community in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to go about getting it done. I don't know who to call. I just know I have these thoughts, and from what I've seen and what I've experienced being in these certain areas. So I have, I think, a real, like the Real Fathers Please Stand Up movement. I have other things that are on the same line of that I believe will work and will change things, but I don't know how to go about getting that stuff done or who to call or anything, you know. So if there was a team of people or a directors, board of directors that can sit down with me, you or anybody that knows how to get these things done, you can call me tomorrow. I'll be down there quick, fast, in a hurry and put this plan in. So because somebody, that's why I call myself the New Voice of People, because I will go down there and speak up. I don't mind doing what the other people are afraid to do, their fear of what might happen to them. I don't mind taking on that responsibility.
Right. And, you know, a lot of times, just like with your situation, there are a lot of us who have some brilliant ideas, and unfortunately, they never see the light of day because we don't know who to go and share them with, or we're discouraged from sharing them, and things of that nature. I'll let you know right now that I'd love to sit down with you and look at what you have. But one of the other things that we can do is when you have problems within your community, you've got a representative who lives in your community who speaks for you, and he or she should make time to hear from you. I tell people all the time, call your representative, call your senator, call your congressman, call your city, county council person that represents your community, because that's what they're there to do. You are a part of their constituency. And so when you have ideas, you know, my thing is, hey, take them right to the top. Sit down with folks who are interested in hearing what you've got to say and what you want to share, one. But then, two, your public servant in terms of your representative, that's what they're in office to do. That's what they promised to do for you when they solicited your vote.
Okay. Now,
so,
let's say, for instance, that they don't help you, because that's a possibility. You know, they
mm-hmm.
can use things like, well, you know, too busy right now. We got all these other things going on. Who's a substitute mm-hmm. for the politicians and the local representatives who are not going to be able to help you? Who, I mean, what other people do you, you know, take on a call to get your voice heard and get these ideas put in action to where people can start seeing the effect of it in the community?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, one of the things that you do, Taj, is exactly what you're doing right now. You went out and you started a talk show to be able to talk about these issues, to be able to get the information spread throughout the community in ways that ordinarily wouldn't be available. So my thing is being persistent. I'm one of those folks where I don't take no very easily. You know, I'm going to keep coming back, and I'm going to keep coming back. I'm going to ask you two or three different ways. And my hope is that eventually you get tired of hearing from me or seeing me, and then you'll want to sit down and talk with me.
Right.
But I tell folks not to get discouraged when a door is closed in your face. My belief is that when God closes one door, he's opening another. And
right.
So, you know, you have to be persistent in terms of trying to reach out and making contact so that your voice is heard. You know, don't be fooled into silence because you're not receiving the support or because you were told no one time. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be told no the second time. And so I would encourage everybody to continue pushing on and to stay persistent in terms of making sure that your voice is heard.
Yeah, you mentioned the show and how and the creation of this. It's a good tool,
mm-hmm.
and I was actually featured on the Dawn and Smiley show yesterday.
Okay.
And so I was actually on there, and I spoke about tackling some of the same issues. However, I don't have the necessary funding to push,
mm-hmm.
you know, to push this and to put the billboards up in the city like I want to do, because nobody's done that in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has a billboard of 96.3 with Russ Parr's face on it, or Tom Jordan's face on a nice, big, huge billboard, or his name on the, you know, skyline or anything. So, you know,
right.
I want to do those types of outdoor advertisement to push this, but it's not necessarily for money. It's for a reason why I'm doing this. So yes, I have the show, but you'll be amazed at the people when I do shows like the N word, or like I've done like I did the shows with How to Be a Better Black Man, Black Woman, and I've done shows about the pants sagging law that they just put on.
Mm-hmm.
When I tackled these issues, I even did a show about Don Imus when he made that racial comment about Pac-Man Jones. And I put up a poll on my site, and not too many people have answered that poll. I have gone through the necessary steps of
right.
pushing my message and pushing the show in the face of African Americans. I had a MySpace page, and
mm-hmm.
that page had over 3,300 people on it, and 90% of the people were black, and over 50% of them were over the ages of 30.
Okay.
So when I'm pushing this in you and you're not responding, you're not calling mm-hmm. to the show, you're not even listening to the show because I can track all those things. So mm-hmm. it becomes a frustration
right.
when you're doing something for your people and they're not giving you all the support that you should get back.
Right.
So,
well, I'll say, and let me encourage you, brother, that, you know, to no matter what, to keep doing what you're doing, even when it seems like you're not getting the response that you desire. I had to come to the realization early on that, you know, Steve, you may not be the one to change the world. You may not be able to reach everybody. But if you can reach just one, then you've done your job. Tupac said that he may not be may not have the thought, in so many words, you know, he may not have the thought or the answers to alleviate all the problems that we as black men in the black community face, but he can be the spark of the one who would come to deal with that. And that's the way that he viewed things. So no matter how difficult it gets and how small your response may be, I would hope and pray that you would continue pushing on and that you would continue doing the work that you're doing because it is necessary. Had you not reached out to me, odds are I would not be having this discussion this evening. And so, you know, you're making a difference no matter how slow it may come or how small it may be. If you just continue chipping away at it, eventually you're going to have a big enough dent in it to where you can move it. And so that's the thing. What I would say, too, and something else that I tell folks quite a bit, is one of the things that we have to get better at doing is networking and making sure that we're involved in as many circles as we possibly can be in of individuals who are like-minded in terms of thought, who are going in the same direction that we are trying to go, because oftentimes you can find a lot of support within your network to continue with your projects and the things that you're trying to do. It's just a matter of, you know, sometimes being in the right place at the right time. And so, you know, definitely expanding our network and making sure that we're out and in the mix when it comes to things that are important to us definitely help us to continue moving forward in the direction we want to go in.
Exactly. I also, you know, as far as the status of African-American males, you know, we have, you know, like I said, you know, I read a statistic that the state of Ohio has over like 60% of their males not even graduate from high school.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to call a meeting to figure out a solution. And, you know, and even in our own city, I see, you know, during the day, I see high schoolers, well, they're out of school now, but when the school year was in, you know, I see them get off the bus. They don't have no books in their hand. They don't have no notebook, no spiral book, no pen. You know what I mean? You know, or they're not even going to school at all. I see them walking down the street. You know, what can we do to get them to understand the importance of at least getting a high school diploma? You know, you may not want to go to college, but at least get the beginning stages. I mean, get the diploma. They don't think that school is important. For some reason, these kids have switched their mindset and think that school is not important anymore. It's
right.
not cool to graduate no more.
Right. Well, you know, unfortunately, just as we talked about the system a little bit earlier, there are a lot of flaws within our education system, flaws in terms of the way that our children are being educated, disproportionate number of especially black males in terms of suspension and expulsion. You know, when we look into all of these things and we see all of the problems that are there, you know, it's like, wow, okay, now I'm understanding why our children, you know, don't like school. You know, it's different when you know, you're starting out in school and you are learning to read, and when you make the shift to reading to learn, you know, things begin to change. One of the big pieces to that also is the teacher. And we've been pushing for quite some time now a cultural competency piece and trying to make sure that all of our educators are culturally competent and understand how to work and educate African-American students. Having a better understanding of, you know, Tony may be a little sleepy today. He was up all night, you know, taking care of little sister or something to that degree. There are a lot of things that factor into why our children perform at the level that they perform. Unfortunately, for a lot of the young men, being kicked out of the classroom, in school suspension, home suspension, ultimately leading to expulsion, a lot of the kids, they don't go back. They get so far behind from missing all of that class time that by the time that those that go back get into the classroom, they're failing. And so we've got to begin to look at it from within and understanding that, you know, those individuals that we empower to be in the position to educate our children, it's important that they understand cultural differences, because there are not a lot of African-American teachers in the state and even fewer African-American male teachers. And this is actually nationwide. This is not even, you know, something that's isolated to Indianapolis. And I'll take it a step further and say that this is a worldwide situation. You know, we had received some information last year that the dropout rate, suspension and expulsion for African-American males, even in London, was just unbelievable. And so this is something that's going on around the country. Now, there is a lot of talk right now with regards to education and the black male. That's another one of those flavor of the month type things, because folks are starting to want to understand why our black males are not succeeding in school, and even a step further, are not having access to higher education, and those who do gain access are not being retained. So there's an effect with the overall success of black males in education. And so there are quite a few studies that have come out with regard to that.
I believe it's when it comes to the education of the black male, I believe there's a few issues. First, these teachers are not allowed or given the opportunity to actually teach because a lot of them are doing nothing but babysitting. Honestly, when I went to my son's school and sat in on his class one day a few times, I just sat back and watched. And really, the majority of the time, the teacher was trying to teach, but the majority of the time, she's saying, "Stop, don't, quit." I said, and that sounds like parenting. That sounds like babysitting. I'm like, man, these kids were natives in there wilding out, you know. And I'm like, well, that's part of the problem. And I'm just hearing this from other people, not when as far as their kids and their teachers are concerned, they're doing a lot of babysitting. Well, to me, that comes from it starting at home. These teachers can't raise your kids. Principals can't raise your kids. Nobody else can raise kids. When your kids come home with that homework, you got to sit down and do it. You got to ask them how their day was. You got to ask them, what did you learn today? Or what was your homework? Let's go over your homework. Now you need to study. They need to know the importance of that instead of going home playing a video game or going home and watching TV until it's time to go to sleep and just doing the homework and not even ignoring it. You know, it starts at home, and that's big part of the reason.
Right. Well, I would agree with you that is definitely a part of it. You know, but let's look at it for what it is too, because I know in terms of generational, there are some parents that when the children are bringing home, and we're talking about parents that are engaged in their child's education and the entire process, the child's bringing home different types of math and different types of subjects that they didn't do, years and years ago. And so it's difficult for them to be able to understand, you know, how to help them with that. However, it shouldn't just stop there. You know, definitely, you know, there are, I would look into, you know, as many resources as possible. One of those being taking an active role in terms of being in the school, knowing the teachers, knowing the administrators of the school. You know, these are things that we have control of. One of the things, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times, the only time that some of us are in our children's schools is when something's happened. And
right.
So not necessarily, you know, just to check up and see how things are going, or to participate in a PTA meeting or things of that nature. There are a lot of different ways that school systems are trying to engage parents, and I think that there needs to be some more thought and effort towards that. However, it still doesn't negate the fact that, you know, we have to look at the way that our children are being educated in terms of cultural competency and things of that nature. You know, we will definitely continue to push that, and making sure that, you know, it's not so much that, you know, you have to do things totally different for African-American children, but having a better understanding goes a long way. And with that, you know, we just hope that, you know, we can continue to get that out there and hopes that we can get some things accomplished with that.
I want to go back to we got a little bit over like 20 minutes left. I actually extended the show a little bit because the conversation was going good. It sounds like we would have ran out of time, honestly.
That's true. Okay.
Yeah, we would run out of time, and we was having a good dialogue, so I didn't want to, you know, I've did some things before where we ran out of time, and I had to do a part two, and, you know, so I just want to try to squeeze it all in one, so I stretched out a little bit, so we got like 22 minutes left, but
okay.
I want to go back into the prison aspect of it, because that's real important, because we've always taken up majority of the prison population.
Right.
Now, I know in a lot of cases that some brothers have been over-sentenced.
Mm-hmm.
They did the crime, okay, but they've been over-sentenced. So they've been, you know, they might have got 20 years for something they really should only got 8 years for.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was thinking to myself, should it be like a group of lawyers or a coalition of lawyers, somebody that put together to overlook these cases once these people have been sent away, just to make sure they was rightfully tried and they was rightfully sentenced and stuff like that, because if they're spending 10 years, they've only supposed to have gotten three, then they've been cheated. Yeah, they did the crime, they've been cheated, and now that's what, you know, seven more years on their life that they wasted, they was in there and they shouldn't have been. I mean, do you agree with like that there should be something along to make sure that they was rightfully convicted and sentenced?
Well, what my thoughts are on that is that when a judge imposes sentence, he does that, you know, to what the law would allow, meaning that if the law says that, you know, there's a minimum of three, a maximum of 10, he can't go back and say, okay, you're going to get 20. It has to be within the maximum, I mean, within, you know, what the law would allow. Now, with that, the change needs to take place, I think, to the laws when it comes to certain things. You know, just like the conversation about the disparity between crack and powder cocaine and the amount of time. Unfortunately, that's in the law, and that's something that needs to be looked at. However, sentencing disparities are definitely a big issue. What I would suggest and what I have mentioned before is that, you know, when you have a situation like that to where you are thinking or you know someone and or you know, this person may have been sentenced unfairly or whatever have you. It doesn't hurt to call and ask. It doesn't hurt to call the Civil Rights Commission and say, this is what's going on. Can you give me some direction with that? And see, we've got some things that are in place and some organizations are in place, but a lot of folks don't know how to access that information. And so, you know, Indiana has, you know, not only a commission on the social status of black males who is not a direct service provider, but definitely strives to provide service for the state in terms of education, with regards to what's going on with black males and recommendations for change. But you also have commissions like your Civil Rights Commission. You know, we have a commission for Hispanic and Latino affairs. We've got a women's commission. We have all of these groups that are there. You know, you've got the ACLU. You have all of these folks there providing a service and can answer questions and can help you to be able to navigate your way through to get to where you need to be. But going back to what you were saying, you know, there are some definite changes that need to be made to some of our laws with regard to sentencing. And unfortunately, some of them adversely affect black males, like the disparity in sentences between crack and powder cocaine.
Yeah, that and also the pants-sagging law. The pants-sagging law was a direct aim to brothers.
Right.
They can say that, you know, they can say what they want, but certain laws have been like the hip hop police. How come
right.
rock and roll don't have a police? How come country don't have a police? I mean, rock and roll stars have about as many issues as hip hop artists. You just don't hear about them.
Right.
You know, they kill themselves. They do a lot of drugs. Where's their police department to make sure they're true? You know, it's a certain things that they obviously they know they can they find something that we do a lot per se, and they put a police task force right there, or they put
mm-hmm.
a law right there specifically for us. So
mm-hmm.
basically, attacking us, knowing if you do a nationwide ban on pants sagging, you're gonna lock up 90% of the brothers in one day.
Right. Yeah, you're gonna definitely hit a lot of the young brothers, and you know we've made efforts through our mentoring program that we do with the commission, Brother to Brother program, which we get out into schools and mentor young men and try to teach them the historical significance of the sagging pants and trying to teach these things to them so that they have a better understanding of what it is exactly that they're doing. Some of them embrace it and like, oh, well, you know, I didn't know that. So, but then some of them are like, well, I know that that's not me, so I'm not going to worry about it. And so, you know, you definitely have a generational difference with regard to that right now. And there are a lot of people who attach it to the hip hop community, and you got some folks within the hip hop community say, well, it's got nothing to do with hip hop. But I do believe that it's a fad. So it's something, you know, that's come in, and, you know, we don't know how long it's going to be around.
It's going to be around for a while, and I'm going to tell you why it's going to be around for a while, because it's a prison thing. That pants sagging was created in behind them bars where if your pants were sagging, that was a sign that you were somebody's woman.
Right.
I even watched the episode on TV. I don't know what I was watching, but I caught it on the satellite, and this guy, he was a black guy, he was in prison, and he bragged about sleeping with other men in there,
mm-hmm.
and he said he's been there all his life, and that's what he do. He said these young guys do not understand that them pants sagging is identification to somebody, that you either want somebody to come after you, or you already have been hit, and you're somebody's woman. So
right.
they do not understand what that really truly means, so they can walk around with the attitude like, well, I know that ain't me, but go behind them walls and say that same thing and see how long you last.
Well, you know, it's totally different, you know, when you're behind the bars. You know, I've heard it said that, you know, a lot of time even the toughest of the tough cry when they're in prison. And so,
yep.
you know, the mindset and everything changes because it's an entirely different world. And for us, our goal is to try to keep as many of our brothers out of it as possible. In a lot of cases, it's having conversations with brothers who have been there and brothers who have done that. But it's also just trying to motivate them and encourage them to be all that they can be and provide them with as many opportunities as we possibly can via programs and services. And, you know, one of the things is really just exposing, you know, our kids to as many things as we possibly can. You know, there are a lot of kids who, you know, just don't realize that there's a lot larger world out there, and a lot bigger than Indianapolis, a lot bigger than the block that you've been living on. You know, there's a lot out there. And so, you know, just really trying to bring that hope back and encourage everybody that we possibly can to reach out and become all that you want to be. It's kind of cliche, and you know, the kids hear it quite a bit, and they hear it from a lot of people, and it's different, you know, when you're encouraged and told that you can become this or that, and when you go home, all you're seeing is struggle and strife, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really interested to see with this this election year how that perception and how that thought changes in the minds of young black males, having a black man run for president.
Hey, it's gonna be an eye opener. But I definitely said this on a show that I did. I did a couple of shows about Obama, and I definitely told the listeners, you know, just because even if Obama's elected, just because he's elected, does not mean we got a free ride. We still have to, you know what I mean? Because I think that's where the mindset is going. It's going to be hard. We got a black president. No. He still has an entire, he still has an entire country to run. You know, he still has the entire United States to run. It's not just about us. Yes,
we might get helped,
but we got to help ourselves too at the same time.
Well, you know, what I've shared with folks is that, you know, it's not my belief that Obama is the quote-unquote savior for all blacks. You know, I've been telling folks that you've got to look even a little bit deeper, because that's what makes this election year so crucial. Because say he wins the White House, he still has a Congress to report to. He still has to have support to be able to get the things through. And so, you know, it's a lot deeper than just the president in terms of this year's election.
If his house isn't right, if he doesn't have the right people, it's not going to even matter.
Right.
It's not going to,
for anybody. You know, that's even if McCain is to win, you know, he still has folks that you know, in terms of Congress that you know, he has to have their support on certain things. And, you know, so, you know, we stay nonpartisan as a commission in terms of, you know, who we support and things of that nature. You know, we try to just tell everybody, you know, to be open-minded and look at the big picture. Look at everything. Don't just look at the one race. Look at everything. It's important that you do that. You know, and it's equally important that you get out there and vote. You know, all of these things are taking place within the community, and this is a year and a time which we can make some change and we can have our voices heard. So,
exactly.
You know, we definitely encourage everybody to get out there and vote in November.
Now, for all the listeners out there, you're listening to Steve Ingram, Deputy Director of Indiana Commission on Status of Black Males here in Indianapolis, Indiana. And, you know, we've been talking for, you know, about a lot of issues concerning us and males and the women and just in general issues that we are fighting. And y'all know I've done numerous of topics like this. So anybody has any questions, Steve, I want you to take the last, like, another few minutes, say any final words that you want to say, anything you want to close it out with on your final opinion, then give information on where people who live in the city, once they hear this, they can reach you if they need to call the Indiana Commission for anything.
Okay. Well, Let me, finish out by thanking you again for having me and having this dialogue. It is something that is necessary, considering everything that's going on in the community. I just want to really encourage everybody to not give up, no matter how difficult things get, no matter how difficult it seems. Continue to stay steadfast. Continue to support one another as best we can. Get out there and vote in November. Make sure that your voice is heard. And, you know, together we can alleviate a lot of these problems, but we're not going to get there until we decide to come together and put our personal agendas to the side, put our personal thoughts and individualism and all those things to the side. So I definitely want to just encourage everybody to keep on keeping on. We can be reached, the Indiana Commission on the Social Status of Black Males. Our office number is 317-234-1389, or you can visit us on the internet at www.in.gov/ICSSDM. That's the Indiana Commission on the Social Status of Black Males. We generally have a lot of information on there with regards to upcoming events and things of that nature, our annual reports in terms of a lot of statistical data. You can get those on the website, and any other questions that you may have, a lot of those questions can be answered on the website. But also invite everyone to feel free to give me a call. Also, October 16th and 17th, we'll have our 14th annual Black Male State Conference. It's going to be at the new library downtown. Feel free to give us a call to get more information on that as well.
All right. We want to thank Steve for coming on and hanging with us longer than what we agreed to, because I know I stretched it out. That was my fault, but I appreciate him hanging on extra 30 minutes to talk with us. We're definitely going to get together on just brainstorm these ideas that I have put together for the rally and other things that I have come up with, because I definitely want to be some type of influence where other people, you know, may feel afraid to act on what they believe and what they think. So I definitely want to get with you, Steve, sometime this week, next week. But we're definitely going to sit down, because I need to know who to talk to, what to do, and how to do it. And we can all put this thing together and make a difference on a higher scale, a higher level.
Hey, that sounds good, and I'll definitely be interested in coming back anytime you have me.
Oh, trust me, we're going to get you back, bro. I'm Monday through Thursday, so, you know, I definitely enjoyed the conversation, definitely enlightening, and so definitely you would definitely be back on the show. I always have my guests back a second round, so you would definitely be back on the show. I want to thank you again. Anybody who wants to email, you know, email us about the comments, what your thoughts were on today's show, on tonight's show, actually, you know what to do. Email me at issuesoftoday@yahoo.com. If, you know, go to the website, www.blogtalkradio.com/issuesoftoday. Download this to your iPod, your MP3 player. Play it for all your friends. Play it for your family. Play it for yourself. Download to your laptop, to your desktop. Burn it to a CD and play it in your car. You know, do whatever, and just support what it is I'm trying to do with this show and with these certain topics that we discuss. Okay, Steve, I want to thank you again. You go ahead, and I got a few minutes left. You can go ahead and go ahead and call off if you like. And I'll definitely be giving you a call here in a few minutes once the show is off. But I appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much, man. God bless. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. God bless you too, brother. All right. I want to thank all the listeners for listening to the show tonight. I really appreciate it. I hope that everybody took something from this, as I do with all my topics, and learned something from it, something that you can apply to your everyday life. It's very necessary for us to get better every day, self-improve every day. It doesn't matter if you read a little bit of something, or if you're listening to something positive, or you watch something positive on TV. It's definitely important for us to get better every day in our personal life, in the life of our family, our kids, our church, our community, our jobs, how we dress, how we walk, how we talk, how we just do certain, you know, do what we do every day, but do it on a positive note, not a negative note. It's not about rent. It's not about the money. It's not about, you know, luxury homes. It's not about, you know, all the things that, and it's not about worldly things. It's about being together spiritually. It's about having your mental together, your physical together, and your spiritual together. God, family, business, and that's what everybody needs to be striving to get to. Me, you, everybody. Okay, so once again, I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. Tune in tomorrow. Reno Hype will not be with us tomorrow. Sorry about that. He was supposed to come on tomorrow, on the show tomorrow. He will not be here tomorrow. He has to perform tomorrow. So he will now be joining us on Wednesdays instead of Thursdays. Okay, so I know a lot of people are probably looking forward to that. Check him out every Wednesday. So he will not be with us tomorrow. Check him out next Wednesday, and he'll be on every Wednesday coming up. If you want to be a part, and when we send you out email blast every day, send me an email at issuesoftoday@yahoo.com with your email address. Or if you go onto the site, there is a box down there that you can add your name to, and I'll get the email and add you to my email list immediately. And you will definitely get the blast out once a week. I used to send them out every day. I don't no longer do that. I only send them out one day a week. And what it is, you get an overview of the entire week of what the show is going to be about or what that particular week is going to be about. So I give you the shows from Monday through Thursday, who's going to be on the show, the topics, and everything. You get that on the email blast. So instead of me sending it out every day, I only send it out one day a week now, okay? Any other days, take the polls. I know I say this every show, but take the polls. Go on my site, take the polls. It helps me know what I'm doing good, what I need to improve in, how you guys like the show, what kind of topics that you like, and so forth. So please, please, please go on the site and check out the polls. If anybody has to give me a call for, you know, you want me to come be a speaker, or you have a question that you need to ask me, you want to be a potential guest, you can call me 317-429-0767. All right, that's 317-429-0767. If you need to call me for, you want to be a guest on the show, if you want me to come out and be a speaker of some sort, if you got some questions for me, whatever it is you got. Stay tuned for updates on the Real Fathers Please Stand Up movement. That is for real. That is not something I just thought of and not going to do. It is real. It's going to happen. I'm going to get the ball rolling on this thing immediately. So be looking for the updates on that. I will probably do, I am going to do another segment and show about the Real Fathers Please Stand Up movement. So be looking out for that. Support that. So we can get that rolling, and we can get some great information out to all these fathers out here in the state of Indiana, and we're going to try to push this thing nationwide, all right? So once again, thank you. You know what I always say, love each other as you expect to be loved. You know, treat people how you want to be treated. Take it one day at a time. Everything's going to get better. Use prayer as a tool, because prayer works, but you got to apply everything that you want in your life. You got to apply it every day, you know, so that's my advice to everybody, all right? Thank you. Love everybody for listening to the show. Please continue to support the show. Like I always say, love each other as you expect to be loved. God bless. Good night. And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.